So I have shared before that I am kind of from everywhere and nowhere is the way I like to describe it. You know, people ask, well, where are you from? And it's easy to say, well, I'm from Cedar Rapids. My family's lived here for almost 17 years. It's the longest I've lived anywhere. But my dad was in the Air Force, and so we have been all over the place. And so mom and dad had done most of the moving by the time I was old enough to start remembering things, but there were still moves that took place. And so I didn't have the experience of growing up belonging in a particular geographical area. I belonged to my family, but up until we spent 9 years living in Southern Virginia, I was just used to moving around. And then when we moved from Virginia to Iowa, I was a angsty 16-year-old, and so was inclined to dislike whatever it was that mom and dad had decided we were going to do, which in this case was moving to Iowa. But it was, for me, a particular experience of grief that actually illustrated something that I think C.S. Lewis articulated perhaps the best. And I am going to convert Father Conway to love C.S. Lewis as much as I do. It's the last thing I do as his friend. But C.S. Lewis has this particularly beautiful theme that runs through his writing. And it starts with really the imperfection of the world around us. And he has one line where he says, you know, if I find in myself a longing that the world itself cannot satisfy, then that points to the fact that I was not made for this world. And he says it in other ways, talking about an inconsolable longing. If we think about our happiest moments, they're not enough. We want them to last just a little bit longer. Or if we stop and think about it, there's one or two things that might have been able to be different to make it even just that much better. And he says, even if you go to nostalgia and think about the good old days, if you go back to whatever the good old days were, they weren't that good. There were things that were troubling us. There were things that frightened us. There were things that were stressing us out. There isn't any point in this life, in this veil of tears, that actually is perfect, that actually is totally satisfying to us. But instead of kind of becoming depressed, nihilistic, or troubled by that reality, Lewis understood that actually this is a manifestation of our longing for heaven, for home. He calls it a kind of homesickness. And that resonated with me because in my mind, in my experience, I didn't have anywhere to be homesick for. And yet, places didn't feel like they totally fit. I think we see a little bit of that in the gospel, in the story of the Transfiguration. We have the glimpse of who Jesus is. This is Yahweh. This is the one that Moses, the law, and Elijah, the prophets, that they have served, that they have longed for, that they have loved. And here he is, made clear in front of fishermen. And so in some ways, Peter's response to set up a tent and to worship is right. And yet that's not enough. It's not enough. We can understand, especially from that place of longing, Peter's desire. If we think of our own lives, where are the places that we have perhaps been most likely to pitch our tents? And sure, maybe some of us in our youth had places that were sinful, that we had pitched our tents. But at a certain point, we realized that's not going to make me happy. I'm going to pursue the Lord. And we get glimpses of him. God in his goodness consoles us, shows us himself. And we, in part maybe because we don't believe we're worth any extra goodness, go, this is good enough. I will pitch my tent here. It's good that we're here, Lord. But there's more. Right? Peter wants to pitch the tent at Moses and Elijah. But God has more to say. But that bright cloud, as good Jews, they would have known the Shekinah, the presence of God. Presence of God that had dwelt in the temple. Here it is. Here is the presence of Yahweh. This is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased. Listen to him. We get a glimpse into the fact that God is a Trinity, that God is love. There is more of God to come to know. And so no tent, no one place can contain him. No one experience is going to define him. There is way more goodness yet to be received. And then there's also suffering. Peter, James, and John have to go down the mountain again with Jesus. And in fact, this leads directly to the journey to Jerusalem. Jesus says, don't talk about this until the Son of Man is raised from the dead. And of course, we know from the rest of the gospel passage, they have no idea what that means. What do we do? Not just now when we encounter good things, but also when we meet desolation, when we meet the cross. Of course, there's the voice of the evil one that will try and whisper to us, or perhaps shout at us, see, that was all pretend, or in the face of our sin, right? You think you're worthy of hearing the voice of the Father calling the Son beloved? How crazy are you? And so the temptation is to believe that the darkness, either the darkness out there or the darkness inside of us, has totally consumed these good experiences. But the transfiguration is the promise and the call to persevere. And to persevere not just because we're tough and got to keep going, but to persevere because God is always ready to give more goodness to us. We can never exhaust the goodness of who God is or what he longs to give us whom he loves. So practically, what does this look like for us? Let's start with the desolation. What are the desolations that are most pressing on us, that seem to tempt us most strongly to believe that everything we have experienced has been manufactured or is unreal or is unattainable? Have we brought the light of the transfiguration to that reality? Because, of course, we know the whole story. The Son of Man has been raised from the dead. And so we know how it all fits together, and so that can speak into that darkness. It may be good for us to imagine ourselves in this place with Peter, James, and John before the Lord transfigured. What would that be like? How does that stir our imagination? Can that truth, that image, be an antidote to the darkness that might seem all-encompassing to us? And of course, with the fullness of revelation that we have to know that when the Father speaks, "This is my beloved Son in whom I am well pleased." Yes, it's spoken to Jesus, but through our baptism into his life, death, and resurrection, that is spoken to us as well. Do we allow that truth to speak into the darkness? And then let's go to our tents. Where do we have them pitched? What are the good things that are in our life? And it's always a good exercise to think about those good things and to ask a question. What if it was gone? You know, to think about a beautiful church building to which we're attached. What if, I don't know, a derecho came? Or to think of our family. What if I was separated from them? Or they were taken from me? Parents, what will it be like when my children are in college, taking on their own lives? Kids, what will it be like when I don't get to live with my family anymore? Perhaps my friends go away, go to a different place. What would it be if I had to get uprooted and moved? What would it be if we didn't enjoy religious freedom? What would it be if we lost our income? Is God still good? What would my reaction be? Would it be to desperately try and shore up the tent, to keep everything away and say, "Nothing will touch this, not even you, God"? If that's our reaction, then there is the place where we need to experience Jesus ignoring our understandable but still immature plea that things would just stay the same. Because he desires more. Not because he's cruel. Not because he's unfeeling. But because he desires to give us infinity. That's something that C.S. Lewis says also, that we are creatures with desires that are too small. We are content to keep making mud pies when we're offered a vacation at the beach. Where are we perhaps so attached to things that are good that we miss the more that God longs to give? These are wonderful questions for us in the season of Lent. And we see the effect that those questions have, especially in the lives of the saints, who persevere through things that seem to be unthinkable to us. But in fact, the saints learned the lesson of this reading. Not allowing the darkness to be all-consuming because they knew the goodness of God, and not becoming bogged down or needlessly attached to the good things of life because of the goodness of God. So they could experience all darkness and the deprivation of all good things, not because they were tough on their own, but because they saw the beloved Son and trusted the Father's love for him and for them, and so remained always open to receive the infinity, the more that God longed to give to them and to us also.